It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Coming up on episode number 93 of Sports Day Plus. At 6:45, where are we at in society? A popular board game is rendering itself obsolete by changing its rules to comply with our current participation trophy culture. Which board game? Well, you'll just have to stay tuned to find out. At 6:15, it is the first of a two-segment chat with comedian Margaret Cho, head of her show at Moon Tower Comedy Festival on Thursday. And a mere seconds, I've been off since Friday, so I look back at UConn winning the Natty, a Longhorn causing his draft stock to slide, and the NCAA continuing to actively make college sports more difficult to follow. I am your host, Trey Elling. You can give me a follow on Twitter at Courtesy Wave, and do the same for ESPN Austin at 1027 ESPN. As I just mentioned in the show intro, I have been off since last Friday. Well, technically, I did have a Friday show recorded on Thursday. Revealed the curtain there. What's that going to do for how much you trust what I do on this program each and every night? Probably not a whole lot. It was a replay of a Tony Hawk interview and then something brand new with the musician Sin Cane, which I highly recommend you check out his new album, which came out on Friday. That musician, again, Sin Cane, S-I-N-K-A-N-E. Was off yesterday traveling back from West Texas. That's right. Went with some friends, including one good friend who's getting married in a month, to Big Bend National Park for his long weekend bachelor party. And I've lived in Texas for a majority of my life. Was born here back in 1978. And with the exception of an 8-year span that started in my early 30s and went into my late 30s, I've lived my entire life in Texas and had never visited Big Bend National Park before. And much like anybody who has been there will tell you, wow, what a beautiful, unique part of this amazing state. Now, it's a haul to get out there. It was about a 15 to 16 hour round trip. And I did stop off in Kerrville yesterday for the eclipse. Stupid move by me. Thanks, cloud. You think it was cloudy here in Austin? Yeah, try being in Kerrville, which is supposedly one of the best places to get to watch the eclipse. Unfortunately, it was a big disappointment. Much to the joy of those who said all eclipses are disappointments, I don't agree with that. I think eclipses, a total eclipse, if the skies are clear, is a really cool event. But when it's cloudy, not that cool. Certainly not fun to take pictures of the sky. Get to see it get dark for a little bit. But anyhow, that's besides the point. Big Bend National Park, very cool despite the drive. Went on some really cool hikes, saw some canyons, literally hopped on rocks over the course of about 10 to 15 feet to go from the U.S. to Mexico and back again. And really just a lot of fun getting to hang out with a really good group of guys and celebrate one of our brothers getting married here in a month. So congratulations to Andrew and everybody else who may be listening right now. It was a lot of fun, and I look forward to doing something along those lines again. Heck, we're going to be celebrating a wedding in a month. But I did miss a little bit over the weekend and yesterday, and I guess that starts with the UConn Huskies winning a back-to-back championship, the first time that's happened in college basketball in nearly 20 years. And they did so in dominant fashion, and they did so in a way that I think speaks to a little bit of hope with regards to the future of college basketball going forward. Now, you know, if you listen to me at all, that I'm not a big fan of modern college basketball. There's entirely too much player movement. The one-and-done rule really harmed the sport because you are allowing guys who are potentially the best players at that level to skip out and go pro after that one season. Certainly the right to do so, but the NFL doesn't allow that. The NBA could very easily roll things back for the betterment of the sport. Regardless, this is where we stand with college basketball now. The transfer portal makes following things a little bit more difficult because there's so much player movement each offseason. Think about the Texas Longhorns basketball team this year. You had to take the first month to really relearn who's on the team, who the key guys were on the team. Yeah, Dylan Dessou was here last year, and he turned out to be a major component of this year's squad, but there were plenty of guys that you had to learn pronunciations and learn what type of game they played. But UConn is an example of the ability to really build a program, build a roster, develop a roster, and have success in the postseason as a result. I think Rodney Terry and just about every other college basketball coach, John Calipari included, should be paying attention to right now. And so credit to Dan Hurley and the UConn Huskies for going back-to-back and being one of the few truly entertaining teams in the sport over the last couple of years and doing so on top of that dominance. Speaking of, Coach Cal, he is now at Arkansas, apparently. No longer at Kentucky. There were lots of questions being asked about his future in Lexington, and he decided to take matters into his own hands by going to coach the Razorbacks in Fayetteville. And what a fascinating move that is. Arkansas has been pretty good the last few years with Eric Musselman, a guy that I really like as a head coach. I was actually hoping Texas would hire him several years ago. Ended up going with Chris Beard. It's totally understandable as to why they did that at the time. But Eric Musselman continues to prove how effective he is as a coach at each stop and will no doubt do so at USC. But Cal is now at Arkansas, and I think that's probably a slight step down for Arkansas with what Musselman provided as the head coach versus what Cal currently is. They're going to get some big-time recruits in there, likely some McDonald's All-Americans who skip out on school after a year or two, and I don't know how much postseason success they're going to have to show for it when it's all said and done. On the college football side of things, or I guess college turning pro football side of things, been a little bit down on T'Vondre Sweat since the end of the Longhorn season, which did, of course, come to an end with that college football playoff semifinal loss to Washington. T'Vondre Sweat, arguably the MVP of the defense this year, but unfortunately, since the end of the season, since we lost the ability to gain more game tape with the guy, and this kind of did start in that semifinal game, I feel like his draft stock has continued to drop. He came in a little bit heavier at the Combine and the UT Pro Day than he was playing during the season, which isn't necessarily a bad thing as long as he is showing that he does have that strength in the movement. He showed it with the movement a little bit, but he skipped out on the bench press both times. That's a little bit concerning. And then unfortunately over the weekend, he ends up getting arrested after police responded to a crash between an SUV and a sedan at 4:40 in the morning on Sunday on I-35. Sweat was driving the SUV and was arrested for driving while intoxicated. The driver of the sedan fled the scene on foot immediately after the crash, so you can ask the obvious questions about just his state of mind at the time as well. Sweat was released from jail after posting bond. His attorney declined to comment on the incident, and now he's going to have to wait. The draft is here in just a few weeks, and I feel like we've seen T'Vondre Sweat go from a surefire first-rounder during the season to a potential second-rounder to an almost certain third-rounder, and now it's anybody's guess. It does feel a little bit like he is turning into this year's Jalen Carter, a poor man's version of Jalen Carter, mind you. The Georgia defensive lineman that ends up getting selected by the Philadelphia Eagles in the first round of last year's draft. By many accounts, the most talented player in last year's draft, but after a drag racing incident cost people their lives, that he was a driver of the other car, it raised some questions that saw his draft stock fall. That same thing is going to happen to T'Vondre Sweat now, and I think that's to go along with what people have seen this offseason when given the opportunity to test him or see how much he weighs and just see what progress he's made as he attempts to secure himself and his future in the National Football League. All right, real quick before the commercial break, we may get more into this tomorrow. It looks like the NCAA is ready to just go ahead and create more of a free-for-all in the transfer portal. Right now, kids who enter the transfer portal can enter the portal and play immediately the following season without any sort of penalty. Up to this point, a second time has required sitting out a certain amount of time, but that looks like it is on the way out because the NCAA is tired of dealing with these things, so get ready for even more chaos going forward. All right, that is it for the sports talk today. Coming up, I continue my series of comedian conversations with Margaret Cho, head of her show at Moon Tower Comedy Festival on Thursday. Right here on Sports Day Plus.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Moon Tower Comedy Festival is an annual gathering here in Austin, Texas, of some of the funniest people on the planet. Includes stand-up, podcasts, and more. And this year's festival meets the criteria in terms of the sheer amount of talent coming in. It is from April 10th to 21st, so starting tomorrow, going all the way to through the 21st, which is two Sundays from now. And it is really all over town as well, with a heavy emphasis on downtown. Acts like Andrew Schultz, Shane Gillis is actually going to be in Cedar Park at the HEB Center over a couple of nights, Ronnie Chang, Tim Robinson, Amy Sedaris, Ari Shaffir, Brad Williams, and a whole lot more. Jeff Ross is doing shows over the next several nights at the Stateside Theater, his new one-man show. And as you can imagine, with me putting such a heavy emphasis on speaking with stand-up comedians like I do on a given week, much less when a comedy festival is in town, making a lot of efforts right now to speak with some of the biggest names on the lineup this year. And that starts with my next guest. She is a longtime stand-up comedian and a whole lot more. Her name is Margaret Cho. That's right. You've known her going all the way back to the 1990s. She's going to be performing at Moon Tower on Thursday at 9:30 at the Paramount Theater. You can go to austintheater.org to find tickets for that show and maybe any other show that I've mentioned so far, with a few exceptions. Those Shane Gillis shows are sold out. Pretty much tickets to everything else right now. So go to austintheater.org. Or tickets and more info. And now it's my pleasure to welcome Margaret to the show. Margaret, thank you so much for the time. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you.
Good. I don't want to make any assumptions, but considering how long you've been doing stand-up and what Austin means to stand-up, even before these last few years where it's become sort of a mecca, I assume that you've performed some shows here in town. And if so, what are your impressions been of Austin comedy crowds?
Amazing. I mean, I've had like really diverse experiences in Austin too. I've made a record there with David Garza. I've made a lot of appearances, like not just comedy. I opened for Hole at Stubbs. I worked Esther's Follies, Comedy Club's Cap City, also the Paramount many times. So to me, it's just a place I love. I just love to visit. I love to just play music there. I love to make music there. I love to just hang out and eat and wear boots. And, you know, it's just, to me, the best place.
I know when you say Esther's Follies, how legit you are, because that's not always a name of a place that people rattle off when they're talking about comedy in Austin, but it's a great spot to go see sketch comedy and then a little bit more at times. As far as opening for Hole goes at Stubbs, holy cow, that had to have been crazy.
Yeah, incredible. And Courtney's a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
And but at that time, she was not allowing anybody to go backstage. It was just like this rule. It didn't matter who you were. It didn't matter if you were on the show. You just couldn't go backstage. So I had to crawl onto the stage from the pit. It was really comical, but you know, she's rock and roll. I love her, and you know, I'm always there for her, whatever she needs, even crawling up from the pit.
As far as this year's appearance in Austin goes, you are taking part in Moon Tower Comedy Festival, and you're bringing your Live and Livid show, your tour, to Austin at the Paramount on Thursday, April 11th at 9:30. Live and Livid, that people shouldn't be totally surprised by those themes if they follow you over the years. What are you most livid about here in 2024 without getting too much into your material?
Well, it's really this show that is about protecting drag queens, protecting women's rights, protecting rights over our own bodies, protecting the rights of trans people, protecting just bodily autonomy, but also the right to drag. I love drag. I've been around the worlds of drag since my infancy. And so it's a community that I deeply, deeply care for. And this horrible attack on drag communities by the Christian right, who are, you know, with such hateful values, the person that would have the most problem with these Christians is Christ. So I'm like kind of trying to bring that message across. And, you know, it's about the show, but it's also to celebrate that we can go back to live entertainment. I haven't been able to go on tour since really like before the pandemic. So this is a very big first full-scale tour since the pandemic. And so it's great to be doing this live and to celebrate 40 years of doing stand-up comedy.
Wow, that may be a little bit nerve-wracking, but then again, you've been able to work this material out at places like the Comedy Store over the last few years. So I would guess that that tamps things down a little bit, to go along with the fact that you've obviously done theater shows plenty of times in the past, too. So it's not like this is a completely new experience for you.
Right. It's just a great celebration. I think people are so excited to go back to see live entertainment. And Noon Tower is just one of my favorite comedy festivals. It's so amazing to be able to come and perform at it again. So I'm really glad to be there.
So there are quite a few of your former Comedy Store colleagues who live here in Austin now. Does it surprise you to see Austin become this this maybe third or fourth rail as it pertains to stand-up comedy, to go along with the Comedy Store in Los Angeles, the Comedy Cellar in New York? Maybe you consider San Francisco, which you're from, obviously, with places like Cobbs. I mean, is it surprising at all to see what Austin has turned to as it pertains to making people laugh on stage?
No, because Austin's always been this incredible artistic center, you know, not just for music, but for comedy and just for people who are free thinkers. I think that it's just Austin is always where I encounter the most surprising artists who do the most incredible things. You know, people like Christine and David and now Joe Rogan, and all of these people are really drawn to this magnetic force that Austin has. And so I'm always really, really excited to go back there.
I was first drawn to your comedy thanks to your sitcom on ABC back in the mid-1990s. I was a teenager in the 90s. I thought that show was hilarious. And I didn't realize this until researching for this conversation that All American Girl, it wasn't canceled per se, but you had a conversation with ABC execs where they were telling you to tone it down, even despite the show's immense success. What is it like sitting in a meeting or through a conversation like that where you know you're crushing it and people who have a strange set of morality, I guess, are telling you that what you're doing so well needs to be done differently?
Well, it's like the idea of what is television versus stand-up comedy. You know, I'm certainly a stand-up comedian, and I'm a very raunchy, raw stand-up comedian in the style of Red Fox.
Yeah.
In the style of Richard Pryor. Those are my heroes. And so it's really hard to put somebody like that in mainstream television. You know, it was nigh impossible to do that for Richard Pryor, and only really near the end for Red Fox, which Red Fox, of course, had incredible success in stand-up and, of course, sitcom television. But it took a while to sort of figure out what it was going to be. And then also his presence on Sanford and Son was very, very different from what he did as a stand-up comedian, which if you ever watch or any sort of old albums of Red Fox, he's like the most raunchy comedian ever. So it was a disconnect between what I did as a comedian to what I do as an actor or as a sitcom performer.
Do you like having to shift gears like that and maybe cater a little bit more to the people who are viewing or listening to you, depending on the different levels of entertainment, whether you're talking about stand-up or the Broadway show that you're putting together right now for next year or something like television or a movie?
Yeah, I'm absolutely happy to adapt because I think that's what's so exciting about what I get to do as an actor and an artist and a stand-up comedian. You know, like I get to be in all sorts of different projects, not only my own that I've developed, like my stand-up comedy, but other people's visions of what they want to do. So I've been in Disney TV shows, Disney movies, which is really, really cool, and then gone to do different things in music. So I really enjoy the adaptability of my job.
It was interesting to learn also, Margaret, that losing All American Girl really forced you to focus more on getting better at stand-up. That was a little bit surprising because you made a name for yourself initially in stand-up. So how did that make you better as a stand-up comedian in the aftermath? Was it just a matter of you putting that much more effort into getting up on stage night after night to get better at the craft?
Yes. And also, I think that the best stand-up comedians are really older. You know, they're people in their late 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond. You know, those are my favorite people often. And we just get better as we get older. And so I think that it was a chance for me to really get serious about what I was doing. You know, like at the time when I was doing television initially, I was just a college comedian. I mean, I've been doing comedy since I was 14, but same time, I didn't have the life experience to apply to my work as I do now. So it's been a long journey within this art form, and I still haven't figured it out, which is what's great about it.
Is that right? You don't feel like, you surely figured it out a little bit more versus 30 years ago at this point, right?
Yes.
Okay.
It gets closer, but then it gets farther away. You know, and also with the way that the media is, that the way that people ingest news is so immediate and so vast. So we have a new opportunity now to talk about topical issues that we never had before, because everybody's really on the same page about so many things. So it's a really interesting time to actually go at things as a political comedian. I think it's something that we're all trying to figure out.
So does that mean that you're doing a little bit of writing on the road and testing new material out as you're going through this tour over the next several months?
Yes. So it's adapting to what's happening to the moment, but at the same time, the core message is really the same. It's like that we have to stand up for our own rights as queer people, as women, as Asian Americans, as people who are different, political progressives, all of us, we have to actually put our voice out there. This is a really important time.
She is comedian Margaret Cho, one of the many hilarious people taking part in this year's Moon Tower Comedy Festival. Margaret has been at it going all the way back to the late 80s and early 1990s, and you have a chance to check her out live at the Paramount Theater this Thursday at 9:30. Go to austintheater.org for tickets and more info on the other comedians taking part in this year's Moon Tower. Coming up, one more segment with Margaret on the other side right here on Sports Day Plus on 1027 ESPN and 1027ESPN.com.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Back for one more segment with comedian Margaret Cho. She is one of many hilarious people who's going to be here in Austin over the next week and a half or so. Moon Tower Comedy Festival gets going tomorrow, goes all the way through April 21st. It's happening all over town, primarily downtown. The Paramount Theater stateside, Creek in the Cave is hosting some shows, and there are plenty of other venues that are taking part in this great festival. The comedians, yeah, there are some big-time names on this list. Andrew Schultz, Shane Gillis, Ronnie Chang, Tim Robinson, Amy Sedaris, Ari Shaffir, Brad Williams, Jeff Ross, Margaret Cho, who is my guest right now, of course, Miss Pat, Mark Maron, Roy Wood Jr. How about Alan Ruck? You know him from Succession? Got his start as Cameron in Ferris Bueller's Day Off? Yeah, he's presenting Ferris Bueller's Day Off as part of this year's festival. That's happening this weekend, and plenty more, too. You can go to austintheater.org to check out the full list and also to either snag a badge to give you access to multiple shows or tickets to individual shows. Those are on sale right now. Margaret is taking part in a show at the Paramount Theater on Thursday at 9:30. Again, austintheater.org to snag the tickets that remain to that. So, Margaret, I wanted to ask you this because you are a member of the LGBTQ plus community, because this topic came up at South by Southwest last month. It's a new Nick Kroll film, and I apologize, I do not remember the title of the film, but Nick Kroll plays a gay character in this film. Nick Kroll is straight. So for a long time now, white people playing Asians is not good. That's considered yellow face. It's something that everybody from John Wayne to plenty of other people did. David Carradine kind of made a career out of it. And then blackface is obviously a very bad thing that we should not see. You can maybe get away with it if you're Robert Downey Jr. in Tropic Thunder, because it is satire and it's digging a whole lot deeper. But playing that character straight, if you will, is something that's a huge no-no. But for whatever reason, and for a lack of better term, gay face is still completely accepted. Do you understand why that is? And do you think there needs to be a change there with regards to straight actors playing gay characters?
I think it depends. I think it depends on how you're framing a role. If it's something like portraying a gay character who is like a historical figure that, and we've seen that time and time again, too, where straight actors have played gay characters.
Like Sean Penn with Harvey Milk.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like that, I think it's like at that time period, we just didn't have a thought about sort of diversity in casting or giving that opportunity to a gay actor. Mm-hmm. The thing is that Nick Kroll is so gay to me. I love Nick Kroll.
Yeah.
He's so gay to me.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's people like in Our Flag Means Death. Taika and Reese are both ostensibly heterosexual men, but both of them. But the show is all about their gay relationship, which I buy it. You know, I buy it. I think it sort of depends on, and that might be my own double standard because I love those guys.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I think that ultimately, in general, I would like to give the opportunity to a gay actor. I would like to give the opportunity to a trans actor. There's a real meaning to when we're looking at casting from an authentic point of view. And then there's the where it stops too is like racial divides. Like I absolutely would love to see an Asian actor playing an Asian character. I'm fine with a Korean actor playing a Chinese role, a Chinese actor playing a Korean role. The diversity in there is totally normal. Like to me, that's actually fine. You know, I think that's okay to me.
Whereas Scarlett Johansson playing Japanese or Korean, that's maybe a little bit over the line.
It might be out of the realm of understanding. Because I also, that's such a Japanese iconic role.
Yeah.
So it's odd to see somebody like that who is very not Japanese play it. So I guess that area of like 2012, 13, 14 is when we started to really, really shift our idea about casting and about really understanding we need to have these voices or these faces played by that community.
Yeah, the idea of race is such a fascinating one. I used to, I don't want to say scoff at the idea, but I used to push back on the idea that race is largely a social construct. But you really think about what race is, it's the ability for somebody to guess somebody else's ethnic makeup. And just because you're judging a book by that cover doesn't mean that you always know what somebody's makeup is. For instance, I am more Armenian than anything else. You see the blonde hair, you see the blue eyes, you'd call BS. You're probably from some sort of Nordic country, and I do have that in my roots too, but I am more Armenian than anything. My family had to escape a genocide in Turkey in the early 1900s. Thank goodness they did. They came and made a better life for themselves in this country. I set all that up very weirdly, Margaret, to say that I heard you in an interview within the last couple of months talk about why you love living in Los Angeles. That includes you being a foodie and loving the variety of food that you get to eat, and you mentioned Armenian as one of those types of foods that you love. What sorts of Armenian foods do you like the most when you go to an Armenian spot?
Any kind of hats, the bread hats, like the lavash, and it's such a beautiful cuisine because everything is like. So I do like the lavash with the brined cheese and mint and radishes for lunch. Like that, like I do the classic sort of like Armenian wrap. Everything is so good. I put sumac on everything.
It tastes so damn fresh and healthy when you eat those sorts of things, even if it's not always great for you.
Well, it's the food of optimism because I think the Armenian people needed to have hope in every aspect of their life. So when you eat their food, it's like you have hope in every bite. There's the freshness of the herbs that remind you that we are alive and we are living in this green truth. And it's just so beautiful to me. So I live in Glendale. So it's like very central to pretty much Armenia. But, you know, this is, I'm Artsakh strong. So I'm very into it.
Love that. And you got to tell me a little bit about this upcoming Broadway show. I heard you reference it briefly in an interview over the last month or two. It's something you've been working on for 10 years now. So first off, congratulations on getting this close to things. What's up with this show that is going to be premiering in New York at some point in the next 12 months?
Yeah, it's a show that I wrote. It's a one-woman show that I wrote about my mother. So I play her and I play her two sisters. And it's a really, it's like my, you know, when Hal Holbrook plays Abraham Lincoln, I actually have some of the same people that are like helping me with this show. It's the same, it's like the Abe Lincoln experience, but it's me as my mom. So it's a very, it's a comedy, but it's also, there's a lot of very deep elements. It's just all about her journey to America and living here. And it's a really beautiful show. I'm really excited about it. It's a long time coming. So yeah, we just had the first previews of it in January, which went really well. So it'll be back on Broadway at some point pretty soon.
So you're obviously a very smart, accomplished person, and smart, accomplished people tend to ask themselves a lot of questions. And at a given point in time, there may be one overriding question that is top of mind more than the others. For you as a smart, accomplished person, is there that one question right now? And if so, what is it?
Well, I think for every comedian, too, that they're answering an eternal question. Like, we all sort of are answering this question. So mine is, why am I here? And then every part of my work is to sort of to explain that, whether it's talking about race or sexuality or gender, politics, whatever that is, you know. And so that's kind of my thing. It's like, why am I here and what am I doing? What can I do?
Why are you here?
I think it's just to be able to explain what it is from this perspective, to enjoy things from this perspective, and to find out what I can do better.
What makes Sam Rockwell such a hilarious person? It made a lot of sense to learn that y'all started in comedy together, because even though he's obviously gained recognition as a serious actor, he's hilarious in roles where he's supposed to be funny, especially the dark variety.
He really disappears into every role. Like, he's so different. So I think what it is that he's so engaged in the truth of that character that you can't help but laugh, because it's so real to him. It's so true to him. And he was always like that, you know, even from when we were kids and doing like theater class and stuff. It was just really amazing what he was able to do. And like, I've known him since he was playing on the Jungle Gym. So it's a very, he's always had it. And it's interesting that he never actually became a stand-up comedian, but he could definitely easily do it. But of course, he doesn't need my advice of what to do. He's doing very well for himself.
I guess we'll have to settle for him as an actor, an award-winning actor. Yeah. Fine. And last question now, Margaret, what do you love about stand-up comedy?
I love it because, like, I love Armenian food. It's alive. It's like alive. It's like green. It's fresh. It's spicy. It's like minty. It's citrusy. It's like filled with the flavor of life. Like, you're living. It's a living, breathing art form that changes every time you do it. No stand-up shows are exactly the same. They're always different. The audience is such an unpredictable part of that experience. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know who's going to come see you, and you don't know how they're going to react every time. You have an assumption, but you don't really know. So I love that fact of it, is that I can come at it new every time. It's always different. It's always surprising.
She is the legendary Margaret Cho. Although I call her a stand-up comedian, she's a whole lot more than that. But calling her a stand-up comedian is a huge compliment in my book. She's bringing her live and livid tour to Austin for Moon Tower Comedy Fest, Thursday, April 11th at 9:30 at the Paramount. You can go to her website, margaretcho.com, to buy tickets and find everything else to need to know about Margaret. Margaret, thank you so much for the time today. This has been a real honor.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
All right. Coming up, and where are we at in society? It looks as if a popular board game is rendering itself obsolete by changing its rules to comply with our current participation trophy culture. What game? Well, you'll just have to stay tuned to find out right here on Sports Day Plus on 1027 ESPN and 1027ESPN.com.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Final segment of the show means it's time for...
Where are we at in society today?
That's right. It is your regular look at stories that show we as a people are headed in the wrong direction. Very occasionally, I will bring you a story that provides a sense of optimism, that has us all saying to ourselves, hey, maybe we as a people are starting to figure something out. But sadly, today is not that day. We start in the world of board games. I don't know about you. Perhaps you have a family, or maybe you have friends who like to get together, drink, play board games. Board games have been a part of our lives, really all of our lives. I mean, you play them as kids, and then you find ways to play them as adults too, whether there's drinking involved or maybe you have kids of your own and you're teaching them said board games. And by board games, I do include things that don't necessarily have boards, things like Uno. Is there a board in Yahtzee? I forget. We don't really play a whole lot of Yahtzee in our house. But those sorts of games. Candyland, Chutes and Ladders, Life. And if your gatherings are at all like my family, my wife, 9-year-old daughter, and 7-year-old son, well, things do get heated. Things get competitive. And sometimes tears are shed by those who don't win at said board game. And look, just like with sports, losing provides valuable life lessons. I think the most obvious is how to lose and also how to win too. And that is with grace, but it's very hard in the heat of the moment. And while I do try and tell my kids that learning how to lose is important, it's also good deep down to see that they have those competitive juices. Spirit of competition is a healthy thing. It's a good thing to pursue. Cliche goes, competition begets greatness, but competition can beget a sort of satisfaction also. Allows a sort of calmness elsewhere in life, but sadly, one particular board game has decided that it's less important to cater to the spirit of competition and more important to be inclusive in modern times. What do I mean by inclusive? Well, how about this? For the first time in 75 years, Mattel is making a major change to the board game Scrabble. That's right, you get the letters, you try and spell out words. Certain letters get you points. Certain squares get you double or triple points. But Mattel has decided to include a no more scoring gameplay option. They're not just including it in the game, which I guess is something that could happen regardless, but they're actually touting this as a good reason for you to get Scrabble. Not just that, they're actually changing the board in the process. The new launch is a double-sided version of Scrabble. One side with the original game, for those who don't mind the idea of scoring and winning or losing at Scrabble. The other side is being deemed less competitive. And it's an effort to appeal specifically to Gen Z gamers. Man, millennials and Gen Z, they are really in a neck-and-neck race right now to see who can drag society down further. So the flip side of the original Scrabble game, the underbelly, the undercarriage, if you will, is called Scrabble Together. It includes helper cards. It uses a simpler scoring system, and it's quicker to play to allow people to play in teams. And also, let's be honest, to really kowtow to a complete lack of attention span that exists in modern times, especially among, yeah, you guessed it, Gen Z. The co-host of a language podcast called Something Rhymes with Purple, her name is Giles Brandreth, says, quote, "The makers of Scrabble found that younger people, Gen Z people, don't quite like the competitive nature of Scrabble. They want a game where you can simply enjoy language, words, being together, and having fun creating words." You can do all of those things with regular Scrabble too, by the way. But Gen Z needs special accommodations. They're special, you see. Even if they're not really all that special. Scrabble Together is marketed for those who find the classic game to be intimidating. There are actually people out there who consider Scrabble to be intimidating. Or for people who have ever thought, quote, "word games aren't for me," then maybe don't play a word game. Maybe find a different board game. I've got a couple for you. I mentioned them a few minutes ago. Candyland, Chutes and Ladders. Oh, do chutes scare you? Do slides scare you? Do ladders scare you? Even ladders that are just on boards that you're not actually having to climb the rungs yourself? Yeah, that's probably a little bit too harsh too. Ooh, I got it. Go fish. Oh, but you're an animal rights activist, so you don't want to imply that fish need to go. You want to include fish too in whatever it is that you're doing. Uno, is Uno okay? No, is Uno a little bit of a cultural appropriation in your belief? Then maybe we should just go back to Scrabble together. Scrabble together, according to this language podcast host, continues to celebrate the wonder of words just as the classic version does, but thanks to its exciting new cooperative and dynamic gameplay, it's more accessible and brings people together. As you can imagine, there are some names being thrown about on Twitter. Some people are calling it Scrabble for snowflakes. That's not right. Woke Scrabble is another one. Kind of wish we would just retire the word woke altogether, come up with a different word. Maybe that's me being a little bit too woke. In the new version of Scrabble, Scrabble Together, the goal is to collect a goal card. Goal cards include challenges such as play a horizontal word, play a three-letter word, or play a word that touches the edge of the board. The player who completes 20 challenges is the winner, while the player who uses all their helper cards without completing a challenge is the loser. Wait a second. That's not Scrabble Together. That sounds competitive. Once 20 goal cards are completed, the game is over. That's it. So people aren't getting blown out anymore. It's very binary. In a non-binary world. It's very binary, though. You either completed all 20 cards or you didn't. And that's how a winner is predicted. You don't have to face the pressure of scores. Oh my God, those numbers. They're freaking me out. That's part of the fun of Scrabble, by the way. Again, I get back to the point of if words are that intimidating, if keeping score is that intimidating to you, find something else that doesn't involve vocabulary or a scoring system. Mattel says the new protocols and scoring offer, quote, shorter games. Now, there is actually a World Scrabble Championship, apparently. I did not know this until reading this New York Post article. But a former World Scrabble champion had this to say in a statement. The game speaks to a trend in younger people who want to avoid competitive games. Instead, favoring teamwork and collaboration, working towards a fun goal together. By the way, in original Scrabble, you can still form teams. You can have a couple of people on each team if you really want to. You can have more tiles if you really want to. You can make the rules up yourself. But Scrabble feels the need to do some hand-holding with Gen Z. I guess we're getting back to the whole notion of Gen Z and what they are or are not, and so that makes sense too. Now, this is an interesting twist on this. A Mattel spokesperson said that Scrabble Together will soon be made available in Europe, but won't be available in the U.S. since it doesn't hold licensing in America. Hasbro produces Scrabble in the U.S. and Canada. Hasbro, when reached for comments, had nothing to say about this. Scrabble has been around since 1938. That's right. Going all the way back to 1938, nearly 90 years. The board has not really changed since 1938. This change, you may be wondering, because, well, everything has its day, if not a week or a month. National Scrabble Day is April 13th. Mattel finishes off their press release by saying, Scrabble is one of the world's best-known word games, bringing people together over a board for over 75 years. The way we use words is constantly evolving, and so is Scrabble, which is why the iconic game has created a second side to the board that is collaborative and faster-paced to make gameplay more accessible. There you have it. Scrabble Together. You may be bummed right now if you're a Gen Zer listening to this that you're not able to technically Scrabble Together since you won't be able to get the game here in the U.S. Hey, take a regular Scrabble board and do some of the things that I just talked about here. Find a teammate. Find somebody who's actually good with words, since you clearly are not. Find a math major. Don't pay attention to the score. look up what some of these different challenge cards say, and there you go. Voila. You've got your own Scrabble together. You made it yourself. And there's a sense of accomplishment, too. And a shared experience at that. So gather your friends, all those friends who are afraid of scoreboards, all those friends who are afraid of having to think of words, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7-letter words. It may involve a Z, may involve a J, probably going to involve a lot of vowels. And there you go. You have a shared experience to go along with your makeshift Scrabble together. All right, that is it for another edition of Sports Day Plus. Join me tomorrow. The conversation will include Justin Wells of Inside Texas and InsideTexas.com. That's tomorrow at 6. Thank you so much for listening to today's show. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 6. In the meantime, have yourselves a great rest of the evening and hook 'em.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elliott.